hører på Fra krise til håp, en podcast av Norges sosiale forum.
In today's episode, we want to learn more about the Kenyan election that took place this August. Following the election results, opposition leader Raila Odinga contested the results where William Ruto received 50.5% of the popular vote. On September the 5th, the Kenyan Supreme Court declared that there had been no foul play and confirmed William Ruto as the next president. I'm joined by Leonor Toscano, a doctoral research fellow from the University of Oslo. Leonor's doctoral project focuses on the gender dimensions of social resilience and local conflict in Kenya. In this episode, we will also hear from the student activist Dan Owino on youth participation and the road ahead for the opposition. So thank you for being here today, Leonor. Can you give us a little background about the political landscape in Kenya? Because here in Norway, I'm more used to using like a left, center, right axis to orientate myself. But is this the case in Kenya? What can we do to figure it out?
Thank you so much for inviting me. So in terms of the political landscape in Kenya, it operates a bit differently from Norway. So most political parties, rather than being very ideological, they are mostly ethnically oriented. That is not to say that ideology is not present, but it's perhaps not as important or fracturous as it is in other countries. And this is not just the case in Kenya, it's the case in many countries in the world, particularly, you know, sub-Saharan Africa. In terms of the political parties, well, the election had, particularly for the position of president, had four major candidates, and perhaps two even more major candidates. So we had William Ruto and Raila Odinga. And William Ruto was part then of the Kenya Kwanza Alliance, and Raila Odinga part of the Azimio la Umoja, or the One Kenya Alliance. And these are, as I said, alliances. So they are sort of an umbrella alliance for multiple parties, some of them with different ideological orientations. But if we were to put them on a spectrum, I would say that Azimio la Umoja, so the One Kenya Alliance led by Raila Odinga, is perhaps more on the center, center-left, whereas the Kenya Kwanza Alliance, so William Ruto's party or alliance, would be more center-right, more conservative in that sense.
And Odinga is kind of a veteran, right, of Kenyan politics. We've seen him before.
Yes, we have seen him around many times. So he has been a candidate for many presidential elections. He was also a candidate in the 2007-2008 elections, which, of course, due to the high levels of political violence that followed, became quite known around the world. So yes, we've definitely seen him around. We've also seen his father around. So he comes from one big political family, if we may say so. But William Ruto is also known in the Kenyan political system, as he was the deputy president under Uhuru Kenyatta's government.
What are the dividing issues between the two big coalitions? Because these elections were maybe more focused on causes or less about ethnicity than before. But what were the elections about?
That's actually a great point, because despite the ethnic orientation that Kenyan politics may have, and we've seen this obviously in 2007 and 2008, these elections were not as ethnically oriented, if we may say so. They were much more ideological, and we saw de facto, you know, political debates around central political issues that are of concern to Kenyan citizens. These are many, but I would say that the cost of living crisis is perhaps one of the biggest topics, or was one of the biggest topics being debated in the electoral campaigns. So everything from, you know, rising prices in maize flour, fuel, gas, electricity, to inflation in general. Corruption was also another big topic, and It was funny because I was also in Kenya during June and July, so before the elections, and people were actively speaking about these issues, the issue of corruption particularly, and also the issue of foreign debt. So very much focused on economic dividing issues that are affecting many Kenyans at present.
Which is understandable, I would say. So before the elections, a lot of experts feared that there would be violence, like you said, in the 2007 and 2008 elections. So the factors that they thought might contribute to this was climate change and drought, and then the ethnic tensions and just historical factors. So luckily, the elections were actually quite peaceful, and the results were also accepted after the Supreme Court ruled that they approved of the verdict. But can you just say a little bit more about the 2007 elections?
Yes, so the 2007 elections were a period in Kenyan history that was... It was a period marked by a lot of what we call electoral violence. It's a form of political violence where violent means are used to shape electoral competition, where the targets are also defined by electoral competition. And just to give you a sense of the numbers, we're talking about 500,000 to 700,000 people displaced by the violence, either because they were expelled from their homes or because they had to flee or because their businesses and homes were destroyed. So a lot of people had to leave, abandon effectively their area of residence, around 1,500 deaths, and also 900, from what we know, cases of sexual violence. These might actually be higher because of issues around reporting. We assume that not all victims reported. There is a good report that I would recommend if people are interested in the topic of the 2007-2008 Kenyan crisis, which would be the Waki report, very detailed in both when it comes to, you know, the numbers that I've just told you, but also the actors, how violence took place, who was mobilizing who. So it's a very nice report to read. Again, a very, I would say, dark period in Kenyan history. And there is that the Kenyan people absolutely know that it was violent. And there is that collective wish, so to speak, of we shall never go back to what happened in 2007, which was very much the discourse, I would say, amongst many Kenyans this year, is that we cannot repeat what happened.
Yeah, and then also when Raila Odinga had effectively lost the election, but he still contested it, but also while contesting it, he told his followers, please remain calm. We will win by justice and not by violence. So that was a big progress.
Yeah, and that is exactly one of perhaps the big points that I would like to make about electoral violence, is that it is very much top-down mobilization. We know this from the Waki report. We know this from the Kenyan case, but also from other cases. This violence is very much mandated by political candidates and political figures. So it's very much top-down ordered. These are not just people that obviously there are also some groups that mobilize by themselves, but usually there's some form of patronage. There's some form of indication of you should go and attack this group or this neighborhood or this area. Oftentimes there are payments involved. So there's definitely that mobilization that took place in 2007, but didn't happen this year, as you effectively said.
And then many Kenyans have been protesting this year coming up to the election. Like you said, about the economic situation and about different difficult living situations. But how wide is the space for political protest in Kenya? Like, what kind of political violence or repressions can they face if they take to the streets?
Yeah, so I can say that up until the end of July, if I'm not mistaken, there had been 400 peaceful protests in Kenya concerning different issues. A lot of them were actually protests for peaceful elections. So there was that collective goal of having, you know, peaceful elections that were not marked by violence. We do also have around 400 events of riots, mob violence, and violent demonstrations. So some of these protests might have evolved and turned violent. And in terms of the space, I would say that there is definitely some space for civil society, but it's not ideal. So the right to protest is actually guaranteed in the constitution. Kenya has a, I would say, recent constitution from 2010 that was revised and contains a lot of issues such as, for example, the issue of devolution and the topic also about the two-thirds gender rule, where no gender shall be more than two-thirds in any political body. And so the right to protest is also guaranteed in that same constitution. However, I would say that there are two main concerning points in that affect this space for civil society. One of them is that there has to always be a mandatory notification. So protests cannot just simply emerge. There has to be a mandatory notification. I don't know for how many days now precisely, but there has to be in order for it to be considered sort of a lawful protest. So in a sense, that does impact some perhaps more spontaneous and smaller protests. And the other issue that I see, which is perhaps more worrisome for me, is the issue of police brutality. So we have seen that police brutality in Kenya is a problem. It remains a problem. And oftentimes these protests are met with a lot of violence from security forces, from the police, but also sometimes from other security forces like the army. So there is sometimes a disproportionate use of violence vis-a-vis what the protest initially was about. And that for me is a much greater concern, actually, because if there is, repression and de facto use of police violence to, stop protests, then civil society has there's a shrinking space, essentially, for civil society.
Yeah, and then there have also been some reports about increasing violence against females, member of parliaments, and political candidates. Is it possible that some women are opting out of politics because of it? Or what can we see from the results? Are there less female MPs now than what we would wish for?
No, actually. So there is some progress. Women accounted for around 12% of the total amount of candidates, which is obviously not that much, considering that female voters account for 49.9% of Kenya's electorate. So there is obviously a mismatch in terms of representation, but it's better than in many other elections. If I'm not mistaken, for the parliament, around 22 women were elected in many counties. Many counties elected women for governors or re-elected women for governors. One example is Nakuru. So we haven't seen less female participation. And I can't really say that this targeted violence is making women opt out of politics. I'm not able to, infer that relationship. But what I can say is that that violence has definitely happened. It was quite prominent this year, perhaps because obviously the amount of candidates, the female candidates, was much higher than in other elections, and that was covered. There was actually the international press had some eyes on it, so the BBC had at least two reports done on it, and it affects everyone, I should say. So it's not just a woman from a rural county running for women's representative. It's her, but it's also people like Marta Karua, which was the running mate of Raila Odinga. So all women are affected by this violence. And this violence encompasses everything from online abuse to hate speech to, in some instances, physical abuse.
But do you think this could be a moment of change for more gender equal or gender balanced Kenyan politics?
Yes, I think it is a moment of change. I think it is important to stress out that we had 4 presidential candidates and 3 of them had women as running mates. So this is definitely a change. We've had, when, you know, just watching the news and watching the debates during the electoral period and seeing 2 women debating for in the competition for the seat of deputy president, it is quite impressive. And I think that it's definitely a moment of change for Kenyan politics. And just by speaking with many Kenyan women, they felt that change too. They felt, oh, you know, this is the representation that we're looking after. This is what we need. And it gives me hope. That's what they said. It gives me hope. It means that I one day too could potentially be running, and not just for women's representative, but also for, you know, MP, governor, or even president or vice president.
And yeah, that's a very big motivation for young girls.
Absolutely.
But to close up, what kind of issues are most, maybe not urgent, but most pressing for the new president?
Oh, he has a lot of pressing issues to deal with. I would say perhaps that I can think of 4 major issues. To start, the economic situation in Kenya, obviously, which was the dividing issue in the campaign, which was, I mean, it was the topic to be discussed, and it was the topic discussed. So it obviously has a lot to do in terms of policy making when it comes to the cost of living crisis and inflation in Kenya. Pressing areas are, again, energy, fuel, so oil and gas, but also maize flour and food in general. So that is definitely one of the main topics to be addressed. I'd say second, the climate crisis in Kenya and the drought, which is affecting particularly the arid lands in Kenya, so eastern Kenya particularly. And this is not just in Kenya. This is a very much a regional issue shared by Ethiopia, Somalia, to some extent South Sudan. So there's an ongoing drought really affecting the Horn of Africa and East Africa that he will obviously have to deal with, because there displacement is happening. This may fuel conflicts later on. And related to this, obviously, ongoing pastoralist tensions, issues related to cattle rustling, you know, political violence in some areas. So around 11 people, for example, I think a month ago, were killed in the county of Turkana, which is close to the South Sudanese Ugandan border, in an episode of cattle rustling. So this is definitely a pressing issue for him. But I'd say it's very much connected to the climate situation. And I'd say fourth, the ongoing war with Al-Shabaab and the problem of the war in Somalia as well, which impacts Kenya quite a lot. Al-Shabaab, which is obviously active in Somalia, is active as well in Kenya, and not just in the coastal region and the Somali-speaking counties, but also in Nairobi and other major cities. So this is something that President William Ruto will have to deal with in the near future. Absolutely.
So he has a lot to do.
Yes, a lot of different thematic areas to address at the same time, which is obviously not easy.
And luckily, he has a parliament and a government besides himself to help him.
Exactly.
So do you have anything else that you would like to add?
I'd say that these elections, from my analytical standpoint, really did represent a change in Kenyan politics. And a lot of Kenyans were talking about it actually when I was there, that there is some sort of what they called political maturity, in the sense that, you know, politics is then being discussed by thematic areas, ideology is much more present, real policy and party programs are being discussed rather than, you know, ethnicity. And that is, I think, a major change for the Kenyan political system. And obviously, the gender question, which I think will be very good for the political system in general, for women's representation, and that we have to follow and see how it develops. But I think that it definitely represents a change, and it signals to younger women that they too can be candidates, that they too can run for these political seats.
Yeah, and there are some really good and positive takeaways to to feel from this.
Absolutely.
Yeah. So thank you so much for coming today, Leonor, to make us a little bit smarter about the Kenyan election. Something that I think we should all, or just to keep ourselves more updated about politics outside of Europe, would be a good idea, at least feel for myself.
Thank you so much for inviting me. And Kenya is one of those countries that we do need to keep track on because it is a major regional player. So what happens in Kenya does have a broader impact in Eastern Africa. So, yeah, I hope this inspires people to follow what happens in the country.
We are joined in the studio by Dan Owino, master student at OsloMet and founder of the Greenleaf Foundation. Dan faced disciplinary charges and was discontinued from Kenyatta University after he and some fellow students found proof of electoral fraud in the 2013 elections. This got a lot of media attention and Dan had to go to court. After his trial, Dan got an opportunity to come to Norway on a scholarship under Students at Risk in 2016. We asked Dan to give us some perspectives on this year's Kenyan election results and the road ahead. So the opposition coalition, Azimio La Umoja, they received 48.8% or around that of the popular vote in the election and then contested results on accusations of fraud and hacking. So on September the 5th, the Kenyan Supreme Court gave a lengthy and quite sharply worded, I would say, verdict declaring that no foul play had taken place. So what happened in those days after the elections?
First and foremost, maybe we in the Azimio coalition, we were not pleased with the ruling of the Supreme Court. Although it is the highest court of the land and its verdict is the final. There's no any other court we can go and challenge that issue. Yeah. But we respected the outcome, but we did not agree with their findings. Yeah. So, as a coalition, we are going to try and put the government on check. We are going to try and see if Ruto can rule following the dictates of the law. We are going to ensure that it's accountable to each and everything it's doing. And most importantly, we're still going to push for the reforms in the electoral system. We still believe that there are still issues that need to be addressed so that we can have free and fair elections in the future. And therefore, the journey is still on with the electoral reforms, and we're going to push, especially on the part of technology, so that issues of manipulation does not exist in the next elections.
And I read on a Geopoll that 60% of the people they had asked had seen information that they thought was false about the election. So either on social media or on leaflets or on posters. But do you think it's a big problem with the fake information when it gets close to the elections?
Yeah, negative news. Yeah. It's too much in the social media at the moment. And basically, the bloggers that are being used by both sides, they're taking advantage of the followers they have. And they're peddling information that are not true. And to some extent, you know, depending on the level of consumption of the public, it can have an influence and can maybe lead maybe to something bad. Either people can say, for example, let's see, before the elections, people were saying Uhuru has deployed police that is going to ensure that Raila won the election. They were sending pictures of police, lorries, trucks with marked ballot papers. So to the supporters of Ruto, it was sending a bad signal that this election is going to be rigged. So I think going forward, we need to be very accurate with whatever we are posting. We have to be factual with the information we are giving out there in social media. They can have influence on the voters.
And the new president, William Ruto, he has promised to implement what he calls a bottom-up economy for the hustler nation. And he says that he will put in improvements for the informal workers, particularly, which make up a very large part of the population. But which issues do you think will be important in this presidency? What kind of causes do people care about?
Yeah, as an individual, I think this need to strengthen devolution in the country. You know, right now, Kenya, as before, it was, can I say, central government doing everything. But right now, the powers are a bit devolved. You have counties. But there's rampant corruption in the county government. So I think there's need to strengthen devolution and to ensure that the resources that are being given out there are accounted and are well utilized. So on Ruto's agenda of bottom-up or improving the less fortunate, I think he has to maybe focus so much on devolution if he wants to actually embrace this idea. Because it's against the trickle-down approach. It's now the bottom-up, once uplift. But these people are there in the counties. Why can't we put more resources in the county government and uplift these people? As opposed to setting, like he's saying, he's going to set a fund so that people can have access to that fund and maybe do business. But to us, we're seeing we're going to kill the banking sector, the credit institutions who are giving loans. Because now there's an alternative from the government, and that's not good. So the best thing we can advise Ruto is to put more resources in the county, strengthen devolution, and I think it will work well.
And Kenya has a very large young population, but according to the African Union and COMESA observer team, less than 40% of the young people who were registered or allowed to vote actually voted. So why is this, and how can young Kenyans become more involved in politics?
Yeah, I think that's a very nice question, because we as youth, we are the future of our nation. And our voice matters a lot when it comes to matters of election. So maybe I think one of the reasons as to why most of youth did not participate is because lack of voter education. The electoral body, that is the IEBC, is mandated to continuously carry what is called voter education, voter sensitization. But I think they have failed in their part to do so. And therefore, most people have not seen the need as to why they need to vote. Also, secondly, I think another reason as to why most youth do not participate is because lack of trust in the electoral system, especially maybe from supporters of Raila Amolo Odinga. They see like leaders are being determined by certain people. So just going to vote and alone is not enough. To them, they see even whether they vote or not, at the end of the day, they will announce their preferred person. They will not announce whoever they have elected. So they don't have trust with the electoral system, and that's why they did not turn up to that vote. Another reason, I think, is because of the economic issues. Most youth are unemployed. So you find like most of the attention they're giving on how they can earn a living. Most of them are embroiled in the casual work, trying to earn a living. So they give less to politicians, what they're saying, give less attention to politics or matters with leadership. So I think that's also another reason as to why they did not turn up in large numbers to vote.
And many have described this election as different than the previous ones, in positive terms. So we can think about the violence following the election in 2007, where William Ruto and Uhuru Kenyatta were indicted by the International Criminal Court on charges of human rights abuses. So the charges were later dropped. But some experts feared that, or ahead of this election, that tribalism and conflict could be part of the story again. So why do you think that these elections were relatively peaceful and orderly compared to the last ones?
I think first we have to give credit to the two contenders. They actually told their supporters not to involve into violence. Their work is just to vote and then leave the electoral agency to do their work. So their voices were heard, and Raila in particular actually told supporters when he lost that we will give you the way forward, of which afterwards he said he's going to court. And he told supporters not to engage in any form of violence. Similarly, William Ruto also did the same. And he told his supporters, we wait for the outcome of the election as well as the outcome of court. Also, if you see 2007, and going by the statistics, the level of literacy has increased. And maybe people now are seeing the need to remain peaceful, the need to love one another, the need to be patriotic. And there's nothing, maybe, they'll gain when they fight each other, when there's conflict. And that's why people have resorted, actually, to remain peaceful and embrace unity in the country. Also, I think also religious leaders have played a big role. They've tried to preach peace, advocate for unity in various churches. And I think that one has actually led to the peaceful election and coexistence of the election.
So before we finish, is there anything that you would like to add? For example, what kind of lessons can we take away from this election, you as a part of the youth opposition movement? What can we learn from this?
Yeah, I think we can see that incumbent not necessarily influence their successors. And we saw Uhuru's favorite was our candidate Raila Amolo Odinga. We knew he's the commander-in-chief of the armed forces. He has all the state resources to influence and determine the winner. But we have seen that the will of the people is supreme. That's the sovereignty. And therefore, the issue of trying maybe to rely so much on the incumbent to influence the election, it's like a past nowadays. Also, another thing people can see different is the constitutionalism. Kenya has shown an example and a commitment that actually they trust their institutions, especially the judiciary. Instead of resorting to street protests or violence, we believe that the institution that we put there, especially the judiciary, can address some of the electoral problems we have. And therefore, we are also appealing maybe to other countries that they should always think of the institutions and give them a try whenever they're faced with issues with elections and not go to the streets. Another thing I can learn from, what I can say from the concluded election, Africa is seen as a country that is so much this tribalism, issues with ethnicity. Communities, they align themselves with their ethnic leaders. But we see a different thing that has happened, the concluded election. The running mate, Raila Amolo Odinga, was Martha Karua, was coming from the larger Kikuyu community. Likewise, the president was coming from the larger Kikuyu community. The Council of Elders from Kikuyu community did their best to convince the community to vote for Raila Amolo Odinga. But the results showed otherwise. They did not follow as per their wishes. So they voted based on their conscience. And therefore, we can say things are beginning to change. Elections are not based on ethnicity. It's now issue-based. People are electing leaders they want, not leaders are being told to elect. Yeah, thank you.
I feel like those are very good and positive takeaways that we can learn from this.
Yeah.
So thank you so much for taking the time to talk to us, Dan, and for giving us some more food for thought on what we can learn from the Kenyan election.
Yeah, thank you so much for hosting me.
Du har hørt podcasten Fra krise til håp fra Norges sosiale forum. Du spørsmål til denne episoden, kan du sende det til podcast@globalisering.no. Flere episoder hører du der du hører podcasten.